store. VOA 1, The Hit.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak, Katie Weaver, Jill Robbins, and John Russell. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Dan Novak.
American health officials said Sunday that Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine appears to be safe and effective for children under five. Children under five is the only group not yet able to be vaccinated for the coronavirus in the United States. The Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, shared its findings of the Pfizer shot ahead of a meeting this coming Wednesday. There, outside experts will vote on whether the shots are ready for the nation's 18 million babies and young children. Late last week, the FDA published a similar study of Moderna's shots for children under six. If health officials approve the shots by one or both companies, vaccinations could begin as soon as next week. Some parents have been pressing U.S. officials for months for the chance to protect their smallest children. The pressure has increased as fewer adults are now wearing face coverings or following other public health measures. In the U.S., only about 3% of COVID cases are in the age group of 6 months to 4 years. But the FDA found hospitalization and death rates in that group are higher than those for older children. The FDA said children who received Pfizer's shots during testing developed high levels of virus-fighting antibodies expected to protect them against the coronavirus. But additional testing showed important differences with stronger results for Pfizer. Pfizer's vaccine is given as a 3-shot treatment. It appeared 80% effective in preventing symptomatic COVID-19, although that was based on just 10 cases found among study participants. The number could change as Pfizer's study continues. Moderna's 2-shot treatment was only about 40% to 50% effective at preventing milder infections. But the two companies' shots were tested at different times during the pandemic, when different variants were spreading. Moderna has begun testing a 3rd shot for young children. On Wednesday, the FDA will ask an independent group of vaccine experts to debate both companies' data before voting. The FDA is not required to follow the group's recommendations, but the process is seen as an important step in judging the vaccines. The FDA is expected to make its official decision shortly after Wednesday's all-day meeting. The next step, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which recommends how to use vaccines, will have its own group of experts to debate which children need vaccinations. It is not clear how much demand there will be for the shots. A recent study suggests only 1 in 5 parents of young children would get their kids vaccinated right away. And less than a third of those ages 6 to 11 have gotten the 2 recommended shots, official data says. Pfizer and its partner BioNTech plan to offer 2 shots 3 weeks apart. that would be followed by a third at least 2 months later. The children's dose is one-tenth the amount given to adults. Pfizer is currently the only company with an approved COVID-19 vaccine for older U.S. children. Moderna is seeking FDA approval for 2 shots, each one-fourth of its adult dose. They are given about 4 weeks apart. The FDA currently only permits Moderna's vaccine for use in adults. But some countries permit full-size doses for teenagers and half-size shots for kids ages 6 to 11. That is a step the FDA also is considering. More than 30,000 U.S. children younger than 5 have been hospitalized with COVID-19. There have also been nearly 500 coronavirus deaths in that age group, U.S. health officials say. I'm Dan Novak.
In Guatemala, environmental workers have set up a steel screen across a dirty river to try to trap plastics and other pollution. The Ocean Cleanup, a nonprofit group based in the Netherlands, is leading the effort on the Las Vacas River near Guatemala City. The environmental group employs equipment made specially to capture and remove pollution from the water. The aim is to stop the flow of plastics and other trash before it can enter the ocean. The rainy season in Guatemala begins in May and lasts for several months. Levels of pollution in the river increase during the rains, and the trash flows farther and faster. But the Ocean Cleanup's interceptor trash fence is already doing its job to block much of the pollution. The screen is grounded on both sides of the river. The device has caught so much trash that one part of it looks bent. "What we are trying to do is help clean up," said Boyan Slot, founder and director of the Ocean Cleanup. "We have never seen plastics pollution like this," he added. Slot estimated the Las Vacas River carries about 20,000 tons of trash every year. The next step in the process is to clear the trash from the fencing. The environmentalists are testing to try to find the best way to set up and use the barrier. "We continue to evaluate variables such as fence height, mesh size, and foundation security during this pilot period in Guatemala," the group said in a statement. Hondurans have protested about the trash problem because a lot of it washes up on the country's coast. I'm Katie Weaver.
Scientists say they have discovered remains on Britain's Isle of Wight that might belong to a meat-eating dinosaur larger than any other known from Europe. The creature was closely related to the biggest carnivorous dinosaur species on record. Researchers said recently they have found parts of the fossilized bones of the dinosaur. It lived about 125 million years ago, during a time known as the Cretaceous period. The findings include bones of the back, hips, and tail, but not the skull or teeth. Based on the partial remains, they estimated that the dinosaur was more than 10 meters in length and possibly much longer. Chris Barker was the lead writer of the study that was published in PeerJ Life and Environment. Barker described the creature's size as impressive. He added, "It is one of the biggest, and possibly the biggest, known land predators ever to walk Europe." Based in part on small marks on the top of the tail, scientists believe that it belonged to a group of dinosaurs called Spinosaurs. This group included Spinosaurus, which lived about 95 million years ago. At about 15 meters long, it is considered the longest known dinosaur predator. Spinosaurs had long heads, much like crocodiles, with lots of teeth, strong arms, and big claws. They ate water creatures as well as other dinosaurs. Because the remains are incomplete, the researchers have not yet given the newly described dinosaur a scientific name. For now, they are calling it the White Rock Spinosaurid, based on the layer of rocks where the bones were found. They believe it is not a member of any identified species. Meat-eating dinosaurs belonged to a group called theropods. Large examples once lived on all major land masses or continents. They walked on two legs, and the largest had huge skulls and strong teeth. Spinosaurus was Africa's largest. Tyrannosaurus rex, approaching 13 meters, was North America's king, while the similarly sized Gigantosaurus ruled in South America, and the slightly smaller Tarbosaurus in Asia. The largest known identified theropod from Europe was Torvosaurus, at about 10 meters. The newly described dinosaur might turn out to be as long as T-Rex, said Neil Gosling, who was responsible for the study's publication process. "This one is really big," Gosling said. "Let's hope more fossils turn up. We would love a skull or teeth." Looking at the teeth could help researchers better understand this dinosaur's position on the development of spinosaurs. The fossilized bones were found on the surface, along Compton Bay, on the southwestern coast of the Isle of Wight. At the time, sea levels were much higher than today, and large parts of Europe were underwater. The Isle of Wight has become one of Europe's richest places for dinosaur remains. The same team of researchers last year announced the discovery of two other Isle of Wight spinosaurs, both measuring about 9 meters in length. Those finds, combined with the latest one, support the idea that spinosaurs began and developed in Western Europe before spreading to other places. I'm Jill Robbins.
After surgery, some cancer patients can safely avoid treatments such as radiation or chemotherapy, say two recent studies that explore shorter, gentler cancer care. Researchers are looking for ways to predict which cancer patients can avoid unneeded treatment to cut down on costs and bad side effects. One new study used a blood test to study which colon cancer patients could skip or not have chemotherapy after surgery. Another study suggests some low-risk breast cancer patients might not need radiation after the surgical removal of a mass or lump, a surgery known as a lumpectomy. The research was discussed recently at the yearly meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, ASCO. The colon cancer study, financed by the Australian and U.S. governments and nonprofit groups, was recently published by the New England Journal of Medicine. The findings let doctors pay careful attention to the patients we think would truly benefit from chemotherapy and avoid the side effects for patients for whom it's likely unnecessary, said Dr. Stacy Cohen of the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center. Cohen reviewed the colon cancer findings and was not involved in the research. Many colon cancer patients are given chemotherapy after surgery, even though they may be cured. The drugs can come with bad side effects, such as nausea, anemia, and memory problems. But deciding which patients might not need further treatment has been difficult. So, the scientists studied whether a blood test could help doctors make the decision. The study involved 455 patients who had surgery because cancer had spread into the colon wall. After surgery, one group received a blood test specially made for the tumor's genetic information to find any remaining bits of cancer DNA. Their care was guided by the blood test. If the test showed no signs of remaining cancer, the patients did not get chemotherapy. Meanwhile, doctors made chemotherapy decisions for the rest of the patients in the usual way, guided by careful study of the tumor and nearby tissue. Fewer patients in the blood test group got chemotherapy, 15% in comparison to 28%. But about 93% of both groups were still free of cancer after 2 years. In other words, the blood test group did equally well with less chemotherapy. Dr. Jan Tai of the Peter MacCallum Cancer Center in Melbourne, Australia, led the research. Tai described the findings in terms of cancer relapse, the return of a cancer after a period of improvement. In patients where cancer DNA is not detected after surgery, the chance of cancer relapse is very low, suggesting that chemotherapy is very unlikely to benefit these patients, Tai said. ACSO President Dr. Everett Vokes said that not having chemo makes a big difference in a person's quality of life if that can be done without having to put them at risk of the disease coming back. The other study followed 500 older women with a common form of early-stage breast cancer and low levels of a protein known as Ki-67, a marker for fast-growing cancer. After surgery, the women took hormone-blocking pills, a common treatment for this type of cancer. But the women did not get radiation treatment. After 5 years, 10 of the women saw cancer return in the same breast, and there was one breast cancer death. The study had no comparison group, but researchers said the results compare well to historical data for similar patients who had radiation. Dr. Timothy Whelan of McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, led the study. We estimate the benefits of radiation would be very small in this population compared to the side effects, Whelan said. Radiation can cause skin problems, tiredness, and, less commonly, long-term heart problems and second cancers. Dr. Deborah Axelrod of NYU Langone Health was not involved in the research. Axelrod described the study as a feel-good message for patients with low-risk tumors. Axelrod added that the data will help doctors understand which of their patients they can comfortably, with confidence, not give radiation to. I'm John Russell.
Today, we visit a place of strange and silent beauty. As beautiful as this place is, its name provides evidence of very real danger. We are exploring Death Valley National Park. Death Valley is a land of beautiful yet dangerous extremes. It has nearly 1.4 million hectares of desert and mountains. There are mountains that reach more than 3,000 meters into the sky. The valley's Badwater Basin area is the lowest land in the Western Hemisphere. It lies 86 meters below sea level. Death Valley can be dangerously cold during the winter months. Storms in the mountains can cause sudden floods on the floor of the valley. But during summer months, the air temperature has been as high as 57 degrees Celsius. The extreme heat of Death Valley has killed people in the past. Death Valley does not forgive those who are not careful.
Within Death Valley National Park is evidence of several ancient volcanoes that caused huge explosions. Evidence of one of these explosions is called Yubihibi Crater. The explosion left a huge hole in the ground, almost a kilometer and a half wide. In many areas of Death Valley, it is easy to see where the ground has been pushed up violently by movement deep in the earth. This has created unusual and beautiful rock formations with colors of red, brown, gray, yellow, and black. In other parts of Death Valley, there are lines in the rock. The lines are evidence of the past presence of water. The area was deep under an ocean for many thousands of years. Much of Death Valley is flat and extremely dry. In fact, scientists believe it is the driest place in the United States. In some areas, the ground is nothing but salt. Nothing is able to grow in this salty ground.
However, it would be wrong to think that nothing lives in Death Valley. The valley is full of life. Wildflowers grow very quickly, even after a small amount of rain. Some desert plants can send their roots down more than 18 meters to reach water deep in the ground. Several kinds of birds live in Death Valley, as do mammals and reptiles. Visitors might see the dog-like animal called the coyote, or wild bighorn sheep, or other animals like the desert jackrabbit, the desert tortoise, and a large reptile called a chuckwalla. Many different snakes live there too. Some are dangerous, like the sidewinder rattlesnake. It is an extremely poisonous snake with long, sharp teeth, or fangs. Throughout history, Native Americans found ways to survive in Death Valley. Rock art and other remains show that humans lived in the valley as far back as 9,000 years ago.
Death Valley is a huge place. It extends more than 225 kilometers across the southern part of California into the neighboring state of Nevada. The valley is part of the Mojave Desert. The area got its name in 1849. That was the year after gold was discovered in California. Thousands of people from around the country traveled to the gold mining areas of the state. They were in a hurry to get there before other people did. Many people were not careful during their travels. One group trying to reach California decided to take a path called the Old Spanish Trail. By December, they had reached Death Valley. They did not have to survive the terrible heat of summer, but there was still an extreme lack of water. There were too few plants for their work animals to eat. The people could not find a pass through the tall mountains to the west of the valley. Slowly, they began to suffer from a lack of food. To survive, they killed their work animals for food and began to walk out of the valley. As they left, a woman in the group looked back and said, "Goodbye, Death Valley." The name has never been changed.
Death Valley officially became a national park in 1994. It is the largest national park in the lower 48 states. More than 1 million people visit the park each year. Titus Canyon is one of the most popular places to visit in the park. It has huge mountains, colorful rocks, ancient rock art, and rare plants. There is even a ghost town, a town that has been abandoned by all its residents. Death Valley is full of ghost towns. Many people visit Death Valley in late winter and early spring, when wildflowers come to life there. The harsh desert floor becomes very colorful.
Some visitors come to Death Valley for just a day. Tour buses bring travelers from Las Vegas, Nevada. They ride around the park in their bus, visit several places, and are back in their Las Vegas hotel by night. However, many other visitors stay in the park. The most popular area to stay in is Furnace Creek. Furnace Creek is the largest area of human activity within Death Valley National Park. There is a hotel as well as places to camp. The historic inn at Furnace Creek is built on a low hill. The main public room in the hotel has large windows that look far out over Death Valley. Hotel guests gather near these large windows in the evening to watch the sun make long shadows on the floor of the valley and on the far mountains. This beautiful image seems to change each minute. The sun slowly turns the valley a gold color that deepens to a soft brown, then changes to a dark red. As night comes, the mountains turn a dark purple color, then black. Usually, visitors are very quiet as they watch the setting sun. A few try to photograph it, but the valley is too huge to capture in a photo. Most visitors leave only with the memory of the fiery sunset in the extraordinary Death Valley National Park. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.